Maybe if we're very quiet, they'll just go away.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 9, Married to It. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Are you ready to talk about this episode after we tease our Again With This dropping on June 12th?
You said a mouthful. Yes, I am. And here is more information on that latter thing. Again With This, episode 11 will concern Law & Order SVU, season 8, episode 18. It is called Responsible. We will not be responsible for how icky you feel after watching it, but we're here for you to talk about it. It is on Hulu and wherever else you can buy individual TV episodes. And like Tara said, it is dropping June 12th.
And why have we chosen that episode, Sarah D. Bunting?
Because Laura Layton is a try hard fun mom. It's going to be great.
And how?
It's not. Yeah.
So, if you want to get in on that, go to patreon.com/againwiththis and support us. And that is how you will get access to that episode when it drops June 12th. But for now, we are here to talk about Married to It. And let us begin, starting with our C plot. Joe and Steve are still happening, and Allison still hates it. Allison is pouring coffee and trying not to seethe openly while Joe tells her about her great date with Steve. Billy comes out at the end of the report and Joe asks him not to let it get back to Jake. And Billy asks who the lucky guy is, which he knows. He was there in the last episode when Joe called Allison and Allison told him. He commented on how Joe and Steve deserve each other. Like, we know Billy is dumb, but like he doesn't actually have short-term memory loss. Like, this is really, I know you have to recap stuff on a soap, but this is a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Anyway. Joe and Steve are going out again the next night. Steve asked Joe to choose somewhere casual. Wherever will she pick? It's actually not Shooters this time. I was surprised.
So was I.
The next night, Joe models her very gothy black date look for Allison and Billy, the latter of whom thinks she's wearing too much perfume. Steve makes it weird by knocking on the open window to come and get Joe because he heard her voice, and Joe rudely invites him in to someone else's apartment. But finally, Allison is forced to introduce Steve and Billy while Joe even more goth teenagerishly rolls her eyes, which you can see in the visual aids because she hates Billy. Sometimes I forget. And then leaves with Steve, and Allison gets envious. Clip two.
Well, it's date night at Melrose Place.
Does it make you feel old and married?
No. Makes me feel great.
Okay. Just a very strange thing to put in the mouth of a single, albeit coupled, for now, gentleman.
Yeah. It's also funny that, like, Allison doesn't seem to have any qualms about saying, like, doesn't it make you feel married? Which, first of all, is weird to say because they've been dating for, like, 3 months, maybe. But also, like, you know, TV has made me think that single women are never supposed to even mention that word to a straight man, lest it spook him and make him run in the opposite direction. And Billy's like, eh, whatever, I think it's great. So I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know either. I will say the general dearth of this, meaning Allison, in this episode was really a delight.
Mm-hmm. We're not done with her yet, alas. At the office, some number of days later, Steve is still not sure about the ad concept with his picture, but doesn't disagree about Joe's talent as a photographer. Amanda nosily asks about his date with Joe, and Steve is moderately enthusiastic in clip three.
She's charming, beautiful, intelligent. Of course, she's no Allison, but what can you do?
And Amanda's response to that is like, wait, what?
she can't come straight out and say that because he's the client, but her face is a poem. It's, I made a GIF. You can see it in the visual aids. It's very funny. Like, her? And seriously.
Yeah. Oh, Eeyore.
God. So Joe wanders in there wearing yet another shapeless tunic to take Steve to lunch. And as soon as she sees the two of them together, Allison's face falls. Amanda calls out Steve's crush and the fact that Allison doesn't mind it. Allison calls that ridiculous, and Amanda drops it and breezes out to lunch, leaving Allison to gaze yearningly at one of Joe's Steve portraits. Like, I mean, okay, it's a crush. Like, I get it. It's not rational. But at the same time, it's like these pictures of him in his micro comp hat. Good God.
Oh, my God.
It's really dumb. But that's it for the storyline. Sarah is right. Three short scenes of Allison. No one missed her. Moving on to our B plot. Matt has to dance for the INS. Okay, first of all, before we even get to that, listen to this shitty replacement music we're supposed to think is playing at an art gallery open. Clip four. Okay. I mean, I guess whoever chose it, because I'm sure that was not what was originally playing. It was probably something more dancey. But if it's supposed to cue us that, like, gay stuff is about to happen, like, okay, I guess that's fake Indigo Girls at the same time. It's like, that is not art gallery opening music. It's just not.
No. Also, please note that as long as that clip seemed to go on, there's even longer. There are several points in these episodes where it just is like you are watching someone walk up to someone else for a week. It's just so long. And especially in this case, when you're watching someone who is wearing a 3-bedroom condominium as a jacket, it's like, please cut. But that's not how runtimes worked in the past.
No, it's true. So Matt is gazing at an ugly piece of art which you can see in the visual aids if you don't believe me, when the dealer comes over to compliment his taste and how special the piece is. It's by some important Russian artist. And the dealer introduces himself as Joel Walker and says he recognizes Matt from the gym. And we recognize him too. I didn't at first, but then after it was called out to me, after a GIF that I posted, which we'll get to, he is Jonathan Penner, former Survivor contestant.
Indeed.
Looking real cute. I mean, he looked cute on Survivor too, but very cute.
Yeah, he does that. He's cute. He has beautiful eyes and is better than this storyline deserves.
Oh my God, seriously. Yeah, great eyes, really cute smile, very cute. So just as Joel and Matt are starting to get their flirt on, because we all know what it means to recognize a guy from the gym, Dr. Russia comes over plotting about the show and what a big deal it is and introducing herself to Joel as Matt's wife. And Joel is like, got it, and takes off. And then Matt storms away from Dr. Russia for cock blocking him. And outside afterwards, she thinks it's funny and Matt does not agree in clip five.
I'm sorry, Matt. I mean, how was I supposed to know that the guy was trying to pick you up?
You weren't. The point is you don't have to go around introducing yourself as my wife when there are no INS agents around, okay? Katya, this isn't Russia. The walls don't have ears. There are no KGB agents lurking in the shadows.
Okay, sure, I get the point. And for your information, there's no longer exists a KGB in Russia. It only lives in stupid American films.
Okay, fine, Katya. Whatever you say. Frankly, I don't care.
Why are you so upset?
Because I like that guy, Katya, and now he thinks I am married.
So go back there tomorrow and tell him that your wife is very understanding.
Yeah, also tell yourself to calm the fuck down, because if you didn't have a conversation before you blundered into this situation about how it was going to be, if this happened, it's on you. I just think Matt is being kind of a dick, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. He's really overreacting, especially given how long he had been talking to Joel, which was for like 30 seconds, maybe. Like, nothing had happened yet. Settle down.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I guess he can sort of be forgiven because this is like in 2.5 seasons. This is the second love interest that he's even had. So, okay. Yeah. But anyway, Matt returns to the gallery the next day to hit on Joel some more and explain his marital situation. They use a million era appropriate primetime TV euphemisms for "so you're gay." Totally. But they get there. And Matt asks if Joel would like to have dinner with a married man. Usually he doesn't, but under the circumstances, sure. And they're also going to go to the theater together, which, like, damn, dude, slow down. But anyway, Matt later finds Dr. Russia at the hospital to tell her that he and Joel worked it out, as it were. And she also has news. An INS agent called her there. They want to conduct a home visit on Sunday. She and Nikki are going to move in temporarily, and she and Matt are going to convince the agent that they're in love. Now, just a second. I realize that the reason that she's moving into Matt's place is because it's at Melrose Place. But they've already built a set for her apartment. They've shown her and Nikki in it. Like, it makes so much more sense for Matt to just fake move into her place than the other way around, other than that they already told the INS agent stupidly that she was going to be living with him.
Yeah.
So this is idiotic. Even more so when we see the next day, Nikki and Dr. Russia have come by with one small box of stuff that Dr. Russia thinks is going to transform Matt's place and convince the INS agent that she and her daughter live there in this one bedroom. Nikki interrupts to say she doesn't feel well. Amanda comes down just in time to see Matt with the one box and joke that his place can't sleep three, but he assures her it's only temporary and asks her to back up his story if she's asked. And you'll never believe this, but the daughter of a rich asshole has some thoughts about this. Clip six.
So you're asking me to lie, right?
Just to bend the truth, you know, just a bit.
Look, Matt, I like you, but personally, I do question the ethics and legality of this whole situation. I mean, this country is having a tough enough time taking care of its own, if you know what I mean. And what will the ramifications be on my end if I supply a government agency with false information?
Okay, do me a favor. Don't talk to him. Okay?
Right, that's probably the best course. Just leave me out of it.
Sure.
Good luck.
Her sincere insincerity is the best.
It is.
Also, what you mean is that in the future, you will vote for Donald Trump. Got it. Bye.
Yeah. Notice that she didn't question the legality or the ethics of the situation when she was drinking all of that three slivovitz, but whatever.
I did notice that.
Mm-hmm. Inside, Dr. Russia says that Nikki has a slight fever, so she's in Matt's bed. The one box is, by the way, mostly taken up by throw pillows. Plural. Like, do you really think this gay guy does not have any? Just saying. Anyway, also contains a framed photo of her parents. She wants to know everything about Matt's parents too, but he can't give her the download because he has a date. So they need to concentrate on what's important, the story of their courtship. He doesn't understand what she's getting at, so she reminds him that they're going to be quizzed on the story, and she has a whole tale prepared about helping make up his tab at the hospital cafeteria because she thought he was cute. He joins her, improvising that she made him laugh more than anyone he'd ever known, and she seems like she's starting to believe it a bit too much, so he's just like, this'll work. And then later, he's heading out for his date in his mustard blouse and giant jacket, which you can, of course, see in the visual aids, when Dr. Russia says that Nikki's burning up, so they're going to go back to her place. Again, why they're not just staying there makes no sense. But he tells her to stay where they are if Nikki's sick, and he'll sleep on the floor, even though he's got a couch, which she is currently sitting on. He insists, and she's touched, but not for long, because then Joel shows up and she gets all weird. Joel didn't realize that Matt and Dr. Russia live together, which Matt says they don't. And Matt then quietly offers to Dr. Russia to stay since he knows where everything is, but Dr. Russia is a doctor, so she tells him to go, and then he does. But he calls home from intermission at the play to tell Dr. Russia where the sheets and towels are. Like, the place is not that big. Could she really not find a linen closet? Seriously? Like, I really thought that all of these weird questions were supposed to be leading toward her, like, trying to trick him into being in love with her for real, but then it doesn't really go anywhere, so I don't understand why this is even happening.
Yeah. I don't know.
Joel comes out to order Matt to go home and deal with Nikki and Dr. Russia, since Matt's been squirming with worry all night. They'll go out again when Matt is not so preoccupied, so Matt relents. And the next day, Roger Lacey, the INS agent, looks through their wedding album and says they seem very happy, although he's not there to judge the quality of their affection. The issue is the suddenness of their marriage, because it was so close to the time that Dr. Rush's visa was about to expire. And Matt says there's a perfect explanation. He fell in love. You don't let the woman you love slip through your fingers. And Dr. Russia claims she was ready to return to Russia when Matt proposed. She had to ask herself some questions about him and realize she couldn't let a man like him go either. And she's really selling it when Nikki comes wandering out of Matt's bedroom in her robe, looking pitiful and saying she's hungry. And Dr. Russia introduces her to Agent Lacey, and he's pretty gentle, but even if he wasn't, they can't really stop him from questioning her, which occurs in clip 7.
So how do you like living here in California?
I love it.
Do you ever miss Russia?
Sometimes. I miss my Nana.
And how do you like living here with Matt?
I like my house better.
Oh, she has little problems adjusting.
How do you feel about Matt, Nikki?
I like him a lot.
Is that what your mommy told you to say, Nikki?
What?
And
well played.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why his next question wasn't, where do you sleep? Because it's obvious this is a one bedroom, but it's not. That's kind of where they leave it.
Yeah. Plus, all of this could have been elided by saying, like, well, we just moved in and everything's still in flux and we're still mm-hmm. figuring it out. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Dumb. The next day.
Yeah.
Matt rolls into the gallery to apologize for the other night and make sure Joel knows that he really wants to see him again. Joel is flattered, but it just seems like Matt's life is really complicated. He knows it's just a green card marriage, but he can also tell that Dr. Russia and Nikki are an important part of Matt's life as well. And that doesn't mean there isn't room for somebody else, Matt insists. Joel will think about it. And so then they shake on it. They shake hands. That's all gay men do when they're dating, and they say goodbye. Apparently. Linda, our friend Linda Holmes, hey Linda, tweeted a picture of this moment a few weeks ago when she watched this episode, and Jonathan Penner responded and said they wanted to kiss and they were not allowed. So there's a little tidbit for you.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So anyway, Dr. Russia and her very short skirt find Matt at the hospital. She looks crestfallen as she says she just heard from the INS, but she's doing a bit because they totally convinced Agent Roger Lacey that they were one of the happiest couples he's ever had the pleasure of interviewing. And Matt hugs Dr. Russia and says he's happy for her, but he can't hide his disappointment about his latest interaction with Joel. And Matt also sees Joel's point. He's very happy that Nikki and Dr. Russia are able to stay in the country, but he sometimes doesn't know what he's doing this for. It's been weeks, like not even, you know, like, again, to your point, Sarah, have a conversation before you agree to this, because you're totally overreacting to something that's a situation that's minutes old.
Yeah. And also that has more or less been resolved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they can move back home, occasionally meet for lunch and freshen up your story, and then don't worry about it. You're just running out the clock.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess for TV purposes.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes people are married and they don't live together. That's also an option. Like,
yeah,
you know, whatever.
Also, if Joel is that fragile, c'est la vie. Like, you live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find there is one more gay dude in town, I think.
You just have to find him.
He's a Scientologist, but we'll jump off that bridge when we get to it.
He's not anymore, but yes, he was at the time. Yeah. Dr. Russia is sorry she made things complicated. It's only temporary. And tells him he has gained two people in his life who will always love and care for him. And judging by his face, this is not very much comfort to Matt's boner, but that's where we leave it for now. On to the A plot. Michael and Sydney's affair blows up everywhere. So we open this plot line by panning very slowly across the aftermath of a seduction scene, candle, scarf, etc., and end up on Jane and Robert on her couch making out fully clothed, which, like, how many layers did they start with? But okay. So he says she drives him crazy, but he has a weird way of showing it. Clip 8.
Tastes incredible. I want to devour you.
Blah.
What? is this sexy? I mean, I still like him, but this is very weird.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a goober. I don't mind it, but he's a little gooby.
Yeah. I can see why you would want to change to that after Michael, you know. Yeah. And she almost as weirdly comments on how everything fits, which is like, yeah, that's how it goes. But anyway, when he notes that the couch is getting too constricting, she cracks his code to mean he wants to move to the bed, and she is into it. And he is carrying her there when Sydney knocks on the door and refuses to be ignored. Jane orders her to hold whatever great news she has until the morning, and Sydney is dismayed but can't argue with the door slammed in her face. Cut to Michael and Kimberly at home fucking when the phone rings. Kimberly picks it up since she's on call, which is unfortunate because it's Sydney. And somehow Kimberly does not just hang it up again. Sydney's great news is that she got a job at Shooters, starting on the lunch shift. Michael has to drop in and see her tomorrow, and maybe afterward they can go back to her place. He can't believe how much she misses his body. And Michael, by the way, is holding the receiver right above Kimberly's face, so even with old-timey phones, she would definitely hear everything Sydney is saying, but whatever.
Yeah.
Michael gets rid of Sydney as quickly as possible, but by then Kimberly is no longer... Go ahead.
Everyone's relationship with Sydney is so TV. Like, there's absolutely no way anyone would answer the door, not screen their calls. I don't know. It's insane.
Yes. Kimberly, not in the mood after this conversation, and snits that no matter how lonely Sydney is, this is weird, which, as Sarah just said, true.
Yeah.
Sydney does, in fact, return to Jane's the next morning to tell her the job news, just as Robert comes out, tying his tie. He asks if Sydney's going to be off on Sunday, since his parents are going to be in town and Jane is cooking dinner, so Sydney should come. And since he's standing next to Jane, he cannot see the death look with which Jane is greeting this invitation, but Sydney can. And Robert belatedly adds that Sydney should only come if it's okay with Jane, so Jane has to pretend it is. And for once, Sydney takes a hint and declines. And after Sydney's left, Robert says that after spending his days helping people get divorced, reconciliations are his hobby and Sydney isn't that bad. Jane says that Michael couldn't stand her. Robert says he's not Michael, and he hopes she doesn't mind him wearing Michael's tie, which is a weird non sequitur detail. I only noted the tie business because I thought it would come up later, but it does not.
Well, and if you're wearing the rest of your, like, dirty clothes, who cares right? about the tie?
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, it's the 90s. Literally never wear the tie. Please. We're begging you.
CC Brandon Walsh. Michael is morosely drinking on the deck that night when Sydney strolls up in her extremely 90s dress. When you see it in the visual aids, you will know what I'm talking about. We all had five of them.
Mm-hmm.
He is obviously not happy to see her and tells her again that it's over. Sydney somehow checked Kimberly's schedule at the hospital and knows that she's working, but Michael just repeats that Sydney has to leave, but his line of argument does not hold up to scrutiny. Clip 9.
Michael, are you in love with Kimberly?
We're together. We're together, so?
Sydney pulls her dress over her head.
I would do anything you want.
Except fuck off.
That's true. She will do anything for love, but she won't do that. Obviously, they end up fucking, during which Sydney whispers in Michael's ear that she loves him and tries to get him to reciprocate, and perhaps because he is scared that she will climb off his dick if he doesn't, when she asks straight up if he loves her, he says yes. Cut to the door, where Kimberly's walking in and hears Sydney's giggles. That was fast. For some reason, she hesitates before opening the door, but when she does, Sydney just tosses her hair and looks smug as hell to be discovered. Kimberly is horrified and leaves, Michael going after her with the ugly red sheet around him, and Kimberly slaps him in the face and continues on her way while Sydney preens. And the next day, Jane is on the phone with Robert planning the big dinner party menu when Kimberly comes to the door looking shattered. Jane, it will not shock you to learn, is not pleased to see her. Clip 10.
What can I do for you, Kimberly?
I just wanted you to be the first to know that it's over between me and Michael.
Well, congratulations. And what makes you think I give a damn?
I think that we have something to talk about. May I please come in, Jane?
No, I'd rather you didn't. Why don't you just say what you're gonna say and make it quick?
Fine. I found Michael in bed with your sister.
What? What are you talking about?
You didn't know? She's been coming around for weeks now, baking him lasagna, doing his wash. I mean, God knows how long this has been going on. Probably way before me.
Get out.
Don't touch me.
You're a liar. Michael dumped you, and now you're trying to take it out on me.
I'm not, Jane. At first, I thought it was you until Sydney turned around and gave me this little smile like she wanted it to happen.
I don't think you heard me. I said get out.
Fine. I'm leaving, but trust me, Jane. I did you a favor splitting up your marriage because that man is sick.
Gorgeous line reading at the end of there.
Do we think that Jane legitimately doesn't believe her, or she just wants her to leave?
No, I think she really doesn't believe her.
That's baffling to me. Jane is so dumb. She's like Eeyore too. Sometimes I just can't. And it kind of starts here that she's like, Sydney, what? She would never deceive me in this manner. Girl, come on.
Well, I mean, I think it's more so that, not so much that she believes Sydney is incapable of it, although I do think that they've established that Jane still thinks of her as a kid.
Right.
So much as she remembers that Michael didn't like Sydney and has not, you know, credited the idea of hate fucking someone somehow.
Yeah.
So over to Shooters, where Sydney is overwhelmed in her shift and her coworker, baby Gina Gershon, is trying to keep things moving as nicely as possible. Sydney is delivering an order she fucked up when Jane shows up wanting to talk to her. Wait for her break, bitch. But Princess Jane will not wait and tells her about Kimberly's visit. She invites Sydney to tell her that Kimberly was lying, but Sydney is not great at lying yet herself. Clip 11.
It's like I told you before, Jane. He wouldn't leave me alone. He kept calling, asking to see me.
And I told you not to.
I know. But when I got this job, there was nobody to be excited for me, and I knew Michael would be. So I went over to see him, to tell him the news. He practically raped me.
Miss, I would really like that chicken salad.
Sydney, are you saying that Michael raped you?
Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. It's just that nobody has been paying attention to me since I've been out here. I was just looking for a little understanding. I didn't know what it would lead to. You little bitch. You wanted to sleep with him, didn't you? I don't know. Maybe I just wanted to be wanted.
Has it ever happened before?
Never. I swear to God, Jane, never. Just that one time. Me, please. Come on, Jane. You have to. You're my sister.
I don't have a sister anymore.
Ooh. Finally. Jesus. It really is such a credit to Laura Layton's performance that, like, you almost feel sorry for this dizzy little brat when she's like, there was no one to be happy for me, and you're like, oh my God, like, you have a personality disorder, but I do kind of feel sorry for you.
Yeah,
almost. Like, this is, I mean, it's really a good performance of her being like, nobody was paying attention to me. Like, yeah, that's pretty much the source of all your problems, isn't it?
It's true. She's more so than almost anyone on this show, like, locked into who this character is immediately.
Yes, absolutely.
At the hospital, Michael tries to talk to Kimberly, but she is not having it. She refuses to hear his excuses and calls him a pig. And he wearily tells her to let him have it, like he thinks she's going to exhaust herself and love him again. But she orders him to have his things out of her home before she gets there. Jake and Amanda are dishing out takeout when Jane comes by with a completely asinine request. Clip 12.
I came up here to ask you if you could somehow ask Sydney to move out of the building.
How can I do that? She has a lease.
Yes, I know that, but she did something awful to me. Raymonda, I love this place, but I don't know if I can continue living here if she is.
What did she do?
She's... Never mind what she did. The point is, it was thoughtless of you not to have checked with me first before you rented her an apartment.
Look, Jane, I don't want you to move, but Sydney has already signed a lease.
She'll never pay you on time.
Well, that's why I insisted on a co-signer.
Michael, of course.
Listen, Jane, I'm sorry. If there's anything else
no,
I can do...
No, thanks, Amanda. You've done enough.
The entitlement of, like, hey, my sister was shitty. Can you evict her? Like... Even if Amanda was your friend, that's not how anything works. Like,
no.
Ridiculous.
Also, if you want to play the she was shitty to me card, you have to say what she did.
Yeah. And but even then, it's like, not like
up,
that's an evictable.
Warn her that Sydney will try to fuck Jake. That's the only way to get that done. It still won't be legal. Pack your shit and get out.
Right. I mean, I wish that Jane had thought ahead to, like, you know, she's cooking meth in the apartment. Like, make something up that would actually be an evictable offense versus, like, she was mean to me. Like,
yeah.
Absurd.
We oldest siblings understand what has to be done for tattling to be effective. This is not an airtight case, Jane. Do better.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you're an older sibling, you should know.
Yeah, really. You're out of the club.
After Jane has left, Amanda mildly complains about getting stepped on by one person for helping another, and Jake agrees that Amanda is misunderstood, which was funny. So Kimberly then comes home from work to find Michael in his comfy clothes, drinking beer and watching TV and casually greeting her as babe. She reminds him that he's supposed to be gone, but he tells her she's blowing things way out of proportion. She does not agree and orders him out again. He draws that he's tired of getting kicked out of his own home, so if anyone's going to leave, it's going to be her. And she immediately calls his bluff and starts shoving things into the knapsack she just walked in with while he whines that she can't. He gave up everything for her. She'll have a friend come pick up her things, and he is not to speak to her at the hospital unless it is absolutely necessary. And the next day, it's the big summit with Robert's parents. Jane is sadly unpacking groceries when he comes by. She tries to hold it together, but he can tell she's upset. She tells him the whole saga and then starts crying that she was a good wife and a good sister. And what did she do to deserve this? Robert hugs her and tells her it's okay. He tells her to forget about making dinner. They'll just go out someplace. But she thinks having his parents over will help take her mind off things. Meanwhile, Kimberly walks into the break room to see several gigantic vases of flowers and a card asking her to forgive him. Michael, of course, and the idiot looks like she's starting to soften as he sidles in behind her to say he cleaned out four florists and that you can smell them all the way down the hallway. And Kimberly agrees that something stinks, but it's not the flowers. She leaves. Michael pulls out one bloom and then angrily tosses it on the table, which does not look
so
cool
sad.
At all.
No.
Over to dinner with the Wilsons. Mrs. Wilson is Bette Ford, a.k.a. Rusty Farrell from L.A. Law. She compliments Jane's meal, and when Jane says it was no trouble and that she likes to cook, we get an idea of why Robert might have wanted to get into matrimonial law, clip 13.
Don't admit that. Say you hate to cook. That way no one comes to expect it.
Spoken like a true liar.
Uh-huh.
Dad.
Well, so are you two enjoying your stay?
Oh, yeah. We love California.
In a proper dose. The air out here just does such a number on my allergies.
Sure, I know. Rose, yeah. Was that the bell?
We get it. Go back to Arizona, please. Hurry up. Anyway.
We can never go back to Arizona.
Just then, someone starts pounding on the door, and of course it is Michael. Robert goes to the door, the better to loom over Michael, who demands to talk to his ex-wife. Robert keeps Michael from entering while Jane just sits there sadly, but Michael finally shoves past Robert and rages up to the table and makes a scene. And when Jane threatens to call the cops, he says he just came by to ask her to keep her slut sister out of his life. And Robert's like, that's it. And when he tries to steer Michael back toward the door, Michael improbably grabs him instead and slams him into a wall-mounted glass shelf, shattering everything and saying he used to live there. And Robert responds by punching Michael in the gut and shoving him out the door like, not anymore. Jane is embarrassed, but at least it ended well. Pretty great.
Yeah.
The next day, Robert comes by Jane's place. Apparently his dad spent several hours the night before lecturing him on why he shouldn't get romantically involved with clients, which he probably shouldn't, but
yeah,
Jane...
fair point.
Jane asks if Robert agrees. Of course he does not. He knows when he's found someone special, so he has to punch out a deranged ex-husband once in a while. What's the big deal? Jane just wishes Michael would get out of her life. Robert says he will after Robert slaps him with a restraining order, and Jane looks like Robert has never said anything that has made her hornier than that. With her help, he will have it issued by end of business tomorrow. And then Michael is paged to the nurse's station where he finds Sydney, of course. She's been calling him at the house, but he's never there. It's not news to him that Kimberly told Jane everything about them. She guesses it's over between Michael and Kimberly, so she wants to be there for him. And he pulls her toward the wall as she babbles that this is all great, actually, because it means they don't have to hide anymore. But is it? Clip 14.
Are you crazy? What exactly do you think you mean to me?
A lot. I hope. Oh.
The truth is, Sydney, that you're nothing but a diversion for me. Nothing more and nothing less. And now that I've had it, I just wish you'd stay the hell out of my life.
Michael, I love you.
Well, that's your problem, isn't it?
Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, Michael's gonna Michael, but here again, like, you almost feel like it's very satisfying to see her get hoist by her own Dr. Petard, but it's also like, well, you feel a little sorry for her because she's just an emotional, she's delayed emotionally, and it's a little bit sad.
It is. She thought she nailed this one, and she found out the hard way. She did not.
No.
Well, let us close up this episode by naming our episode MVP. I'm going to say Nikki because I think she, more than Dr. Russia or Matt, sold their cover story to the INS agent.
Yeah. I'm tempted to say Laura Layton, but I'm going to say Robert.
Nice.
Who, like, Michael slams him into the door, and then he's like, threatening noises. Ooh. And Robert's like, I'm a foot taller than you. Bye. Also, he's cute.
He's so cute. Yeah. And the way he just shoves him out the door, it's like, that's what you do with the trash. Good job.
The blocking, I really have to wonder, like, Calabro is sort of like crab walking out of there. It's like, I guess you can't do another take. All the props are broken now, so
right.
Yeah, you made it work.
Yeah, this is all gift, by the way. You can see it in the visual aids.
Yeah.
Least valuable player. Boy.
Jane.
Yeah, Jane is bad. I mean, I almost gave Amanda most valuable player for shutting her down, but I'm going to actually personally say Amanda for being so shitty to Matt. Like, just tell the INS agent they live there and they're happy. Who fucking cares?
Yeah. Just stay out of it.
Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, Michael messes with Kimberly's head, Daddy Woodward messes with fraudulent bookkeeping, and Allison tries to resist messing with a dude who wears an unbroken-in dad cap, advertising his own company in his home. Speaking of questionable decisions, our visual aids have got them all day. So check those out for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com, which is where you can also pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 And you could join our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm very understanding wife, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is co-signer of Damocles, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is no Allison. Thank God. Talk to you next time.